Welcome to the Brian Kane Peak Performance Podcast. On each and every episode, Brian talks with coaches, athletes, and performers in all arenas who are putting into practice the principles of peak performance that will help you close the gap from where you are to where you want to be, to help you become a master of the mental game, and to help you start dominating the day.
And this is Brian Kane with Brian Kane Baseball, and this month's Inner Circle interview is with Derek Johnson, pitching coach of Vanderbilt University. Derek, how are you doing today?
Good, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for taking your time to sit down and talk with us today a little bit about the mental toughness training and mental aspects of pitching. But could you give the listeners back home a little bit of your background in the game of baseball and how you got to be where you are today as one of the most well-respected pitching coaches in college baseball at Vanderbilt University?
Well, Brian, I'm originally from Illinois. I played at, graduated from Eastern Illinois University. I was a left-handed pitcher there, and I had an opportunity to coach really right out of the gates. It's my first year after college. Went down to Southern Illinois with the head coach who was at Eastern. Was there for 3 or 4 years. Went to Stetson and DeLand, Florida from there, and then to Vanderbilt. So this is my 14th year of college coaching.
And I know today we're interviewing you. We're at the Pennsylvania State Baseball Coaches Association Clinic. And one of the topics you're going to be talking about is mental toughness training for pitchers.
Right.
If I was to ask you straight up, what is mental toughness training for pitchers? What do you do?
I mean, if you had to define it, it's being able to keep the game small. It's being able to manage that one pitch at a time. It's being able to manage adversity because, obviously, you know, it's not going to be all a bed of roses for us this year. We're going to run into times when we're not playing well, when we're not pitching well, when things go against us. And so being able to handle that is the sign of a championship pitcher. It's going to end up being ultimately the sign of a championship team.
So you're talking a little about handling the adversity that's built into the game of baseball.
Right.
What are some other things that you would throw underneath that umbrella of mental toughness training for pitchers?
Well, obviously, you know, I think physical and mental really go hand in hand. I mean, I don't think you can have one without the other. I think if you're complete as a pitcher, then the physical goes into the mental. So for instance, every time that we train, every time that we step on a baseball field, we want to prepare physically. That's going to end up, you know, helping us prepare mentally too. So it's about the way you go about your business. It's about the way you handle day-to-day activity. And I think that creates the mental picture of what you are or what you aren't.
So what are some of the things that you do as a coach, maybe in practice or in a classroom-type environment or however you guys do it at Vanderbilt, what are some of the things that you do as a coach to help train your pitchers for that adverse situation they're going to face in games?
And I think the first thing that you have to do is set up a guideline or a foundation of things that they can fall back on, and meaning you know that there's adversity in the game, and every kid that walks on campus knows that there's adversity in the game, but I guess the very first part of that is understanding themselves as a pitcher. So we're going to go through a lot of exercises in the fall to understand, you know, what kind of guy I am, and that's not to say what kind of stuff I have. It's what gets me going and what doesn't get me going. You know, what were some of the things that happened to me mentally when I pitched my best game versus what happened to me mentally when I pitched my worst game? And just being able to kind of write some things down to understand what kind of guy you are, what makes you tick. Obviously, it's going to help the player, but then it's going to help me prepare my lessons for them, you know, where I have to go with a guy, how I have to treat a guy, and maybe some things that I have to look for in a game situation, either to get the guy out or to keep him in.
So it sounds like the key piece that I'm hearing you say is it's about developing the awareness in the pitcher so that they know, what am I saying, thinking, and feeling, and what's my preparation like when I'm pitching my best and then also when I'm pitching my worst.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, and if you can do that, I think you can at least set up a foundation for the rest of the stuff that you're going to end up doing. Every team is different, but we have things within our program that, you know, we feel make our kids tougher. We put them through some things physically that challenge them, not only physically, but challenge them mentally too. And, you know, so we're trying to, like I said, we're trying to mesh the physical with the mental as much as we can.
So get a little bit more specific for the listeners who are hearing you say we challenge them physically. What are you talking about? What are you doing?
Once a week we have what we call our mental toughness day or Navy SEAL training. And that may, like the last one that we finished up on before Christmas break was we ran a series of hills. And, you know, when I say we ran a series of them, I mean, I'm talking about an hour and a half long deal. And the hill was, you know, was fairly steep. And we kind of winded through the Nashville neighborhood there that's fairly hilly. And, you know, halfway through it, you're ready to be done. And, you know, you got another half to go. So if your teammates can push you, if you can push yourself and you make it, then, you know, at the end of the day, you're going, okay, I handled that. There's pretty much nothing else that I can't handle. So we're trying to put it in a situation where obviously it's not life and death. But it is a situation where we're getting in their heart a little bit. We're getting in their head and saying, all right, you know, can you handle the pressure? Can you handle the pain? And if you can handle the pain, then you can handle anything that goes along in a baseball game.
Almost sounds like, you know, legendary coach John Wooden, who, if the listeners at home, if they haven't had the opportunity to read a lot of his stuff, he's the former basketball coach at UCLA, won a multitude of national championships, either I think it's 11 or 12, and he has a book out called Lifetime of Observations and Reflections on and Off the Court. It's a little blue book. Basically, he talks in paragraphs. If they'd ask him a question, John, talk to us about life or talk to us about success and discipline, and he'd give his spiel on that. I think it's one of the best books I've ever read. But one of the key things he says in there is that when we were really successful, what we did is we challenged our guys in practice every day. We made the practice environment so intense and so fast-paced that when our guys got in games, it felt like the game slowed down. Is
right.
That kind of what you're trying to do?
Yeah, absolutely. And the mental toughness part of that, the mental toughness day, is really only a segment of where we go with that. I mean, we try just like Wooden's talking about, we try to make our practice as intense as possible. I mean, everything is game-like. Our defenders, you know, they play defense live, so they're getting balls smoked at them from a 50-mile-an-hour fastball off the bat of a pretty strong kid, and they have to make the play. Our outfielders are playing every ball live. They're laying out, diving for balls. They're throwing to bases in certain instances. Our base runners are going full speed. And then obviously our hitters always have something to work on in each round of BP. And so you try to make it as game-like as you can. On my end of things, from a pitching standpoint, the bullpens, I mean, you know, I'm trying to create chaos in some of their pens. So it's screaming, it's yelling, it's taunting them. There's consequence pens. So if I don't throw strikes in this situation, then I have X to do, whether that be a push-up or whether that be a sprint or whatever. So it's small ways. And of course, you know, it's not exactly the same, but, you know, that's Coach Corbin's philosophy, you know, the same as Wooden, is to try to make practice so hard that the games seem easy, or at least the same. And we've had good luck with that. I think our kids respond well to pressure, and they understand that, you know, when they're in a game situation, that a lot of things can happen. We can handle this. Let's get it together. It's definitely a team-building environment.
So it sounds like through a lot of the mental toughness training and things that you're doing and the game-like drills, that you're also incorporating, like you said, the team-building component. And do you find that doing these things really does bring your guys closer together?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you have to rely on someone else to pick you up and help motivate you, that's going to make them a better teammate. And I mean, our goal is for our kids to be immersed into one another. It's not an I thing. It's not, well, I'm this, and I'm going to be drafted in the first round, or I'm going to be the first pick overall. It's about the other guy on the team. One of the questions that Coach Corbin asked, and I think it's a great question, is, and this is a kind of a questionnaire at the end of the fall, is, you know, who do you think would be the most likely guy to pick you up at the airport at 3 o'clock in the morning on our team? And I mean, it's just an easy question. But it, I guess once you get the answer to that question, you're going to find out the kids who really are immersed into one another. Because the guy that's going to pick you up at 3 o'clock is probably going to be your best team guy. I don't think that you can segment mental and physical and team into three separate categories. I think you have to mesh them together. It's one of the reasons why bringing in a sports psychologist sometimes doesn't work.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in a bad way, Brian. I mean, I know you and I like it. I think you do a great job. And as a matter of fact, we're going to be spending time with you here in the next couple of weeks. But sometimes you bring in a sports psychologist or a guy from the outside, and he's not part of the team, and he doesn't understand what your team is made of. Therefore, he really can't get involved in it. You know, it's an outside guy who is just that, an outside guy. He's not there sweating it out with you every day. Your coaches most times or a lot of times are your best psychologists because they're there with you every single day. They know what you're going through. And so, you know, you're looking at it that way. I don't think that you can segment it. I think it's all intertwined with each other.
I'd agree with you 100%, and I think there's a lot of people that they approach it, well, okay, right now we're working on the mental part of the game, and then we're going to go to the cage, and then we're going to work on the physical part of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think where we connect is that it is one and the same. And Ron Wolforth, I know, speaks a lot about that. And you know, he always laughs when people say we're going to go work on mental toughness training. And I think a lot of coaches have a confusion that, you know, that it's one and then the other. And I think you do have to mix them together. What are some things that you do? You already mentioned with your pitchers about creating the chaos in the pen. Is there anything that you guys do from a classroom standpoint to try to bring those two together, whether it's a team building mission statement or breaking down video, anything like that that you guys do?
That's a good question. And like I was telling you before, I mean, the very first part for us is to sit down in the classroom and try to understand who we are. I mean, you know, one of the questions that I ask them is, why do you pitch? Because really, you know, a lot of times you don't know why a guy is involved in the game and why he pitches. I mean, sometimes, and I've gotten some crazy answers in the past, it's, well, I like the competition and I want to be the guy to, you know, my mom and dad want me to be. You know, it's expected of me to be this because that's what I've been good at. And so you want to make sure that guys are pitching for the right reasons or playing for the right reasons. And again, you're setting up your foundation for, you know, for things that are going to end up being important to your club or to that kid later in the year. So I think it starts in the classroom. I think, you know, once you build the foundation, then you go back into the classroom and, you know, you keep hammering out those repetitions, mental repetitions of, you know, taking it one pitch at a time and being able to handle adversity and, you know, knowing signs when you're hooked, when things aren't going well.
Now, do you do anything from an imagery standpoint? Do you ever talk to your pitchers about really trying to get that visual image, maybe as part of their pre-pitch routine where they take their deep breath and they see the pitch and try to execute it? Or do you have, like, maybe if a guy is rehabbing, do you have him trying to go through bullpens with another guy but doing it in his mind, kind of that mental rehearsal that we hear a lot about astronauts and fighter pilots?
Yeah, we rehearse, and I think an easy way to do it is pick a topic. So it may be, you know, working on a specific pitch that we're trying to develop. That would be one way to do it. Mechanics would be another way to do it. And then specific games. You know, just the idea of rehearsing going to Omaha, which is our goal. You know, that may sound kind of weird, and there are some kids that we have in our program that have never seen Omaha, Nebraska in their entire life. But, you know, for me, it's being able to imagine it in their own way that will make it more special when we get there. I mean, you have to breathe life into something that is your goal, and that's a way to do that. And so, absolutely, I think you can rehearse everything. I think you do rehearse and imagine things all the time, and it's not just baseball. That's one of the first things I tell our kids. Imagery is easy because you do it all the time.
Yeah.
Have you ever daydreamed? You know, have you ever looked at a pretty girl walking down the street type of thing? And so, you know, you imagine things every day. It should become easy. So from a baseball perspective, it's being able to fine-tune that image.
And what we're doing is taking a skill that they have done their entire life but haven't had that awareness. They don't really know they're doing it or know why they're doing it or know what the benefits are. And now we're adding a little bit of structure to that, similar to what a pitcher does when a pitcher gives up a walk. They may step off the mound, go for a little walk. It's just something they've always done. But I think where the mental game comes in is now we break down, why do you do that?
Right.
And when do you do that?
Right.
So that they then know, okay, I recognize I've got yellow lights or red lights going on. I'm a little bit out of control. The game is starting to speed up on me. Here's what I do. And I step off and I go through my routine. Because for a lot of pitchers who don't have that awareness of when the game speeds up, guess what? The game starts to speed up. It gets going faster and faster, and now you're scrambling as a pitching coach to get another guy in there to save him.
Right. You have to be able to understand when that's happening to you. And most pitchers, especially younger guys that come into us, have absolutely no comprehension of that. It's just not something that they've ever really had to do. I guess in one way, in a lot of ways, the game's never really sped up on them in the same way. And so now they're in a different environment. They're in a more hostile environment. They're supposed to be better. You know, now that they're in college, and coaches are guilty of saying this, well, you have to be, hey, you were good in high school, but the stuff that you did in high school wouldn't work. Well, it will work. It's why you recruited him. You know, so it's kind of a different way of saying things. But for me, it's if you're in a different environment, it's learning how to cope with, you know, with the changes that are taking place inside of you, not really the game itself.
And I think a lot of players get caught up in the external environment and the external tempo. And I spend a lot of time talking about there's two tempos to the game of baseball. One that you have absolutely no control over, which is what goes on outside around you. And the second is the tempo that you play the game at in your internal. And as a pitcher, nothing happens until you get on that bump. And nothing happens until you are ready to pitch.
Right.
So if you're not ready to pitch, don't get on the mound. Stay off the mound, get yourself back in control, and then get up and do your thing. It's not about playing the game fast. It's about winning.
Right.
And if you need to take a little extra time here and there to get yourself back in control, do that.
Absolutely.
Do you find that a lot of guys they just want to get the ball back, get right on the mound, and rush? And I know tempo – let's break this down. I know tempo is real, real critical and important, but when does tempo become too much and become too quick that it causes a kid to spiral out of control?
We had this discussion as a staff on Monday, a pitching staff on Monday, and I brought up the point. And we call it pace. Tempo for us is a completely different thing, but pace is the speed of the game.
Yeah, okay.
And so to use our terminology of pace, I said, you know, the one thing, fellas, is we harp on pace all the time. We talk as a group about we want pace. We want pace because it makes a hitter uncomfortable. It helps us get into a rhythm. I said, but that's just it. I said, sometimes pace is actually – it goes against what you're trying to do. The pace becomes too fast. Your mind becomes too fast. And now pace is hurting you as opposed to helping you.
Yep.
And I said, what you have to be able to do, and the good ones can, is to be able to decide whether or not your pace is helping you or hurting you.
Right.
And so that makes sense to me. It's always easier said than done. I mean, that's the easy part about what we're doing is that every kid that walks across the field – can understand it, and that's not the issue. It's whether or not the guy can put it into his game, and that's really the difference between the guys who figure it out and the guys who scuffle with it.
Well, that leads me to my next question: is having been in a program where you've got, I mean, any guy that puts on the Vanderbilt uniform has got a lot of talent. I mean, even to get to that level at the SEC and to get to an academic school like a Vanderbilt, your kid's got to have it pretty much all together. What are the things that you see in the guys that go on to have success versus the guys that don't make it? Because at Fullerton, I heard George Horton say this all the time, is that everyone who walks in here has the ability to someday possibly play in the major leagues. But it's the guys that can fit into our system and the guys that can play consistently that are the ones that are going to contribute here and then go on to make a living playing this game. What are the things that you see separate the guys who come in and succeed and move on versus the guys who kind of come in and disappear?
I think you could simplify that, and you're right on, and so is Coach Horton. But I think you can simplify and boil it down to really one simple fact, and that fact is most everyone that you work with at our level – knows what it takes to get there, but very, very few are willing to actually do it. And to me, the guys who have talent and make it are the guys who have great work ethics and they know what it takes and they're willing to do whatever it takes to get there. The guys who have great talent that know what it takes but take days off or take things off, whatever that thing may be. Those are the guys who scuffle. I mean, I won't name his name, but one of the most talented kids that we've had since I've been there is a kid who I think should pitch in the big leagues, but I'm not sure he ever will. He's great talent, and he knows what it takes, but he's not necessarily willing to put forth that little bit extra to get there. And so for me, you boil it down to that one fact of you know what it is, but now you have to be able to take it. It's seizing the moment. It's being able to do the things that it takes. And guys aren't willing to do that. They say they are. We all say that we will. You know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to lose 30 pounds. I'm going to lose 10 pounds. I'm going to bench press 300. And you know what it takes. You can do the homework and you can get all the facts and how to do that. And yes, there's a genetic limit. But at the same time, I mean, very, very few people are willing to put in the time to get it done.
And I think very few people come close to their genetic limit.
No question.
We think we do.
No question.
Most people have no idea what the body is capable of. And I think if you look at an example you shared earlier, the Navy SEALs, I mean, this that kind of training alone, I mean, those guys are unbelievable what they can endure.
Yeah, I mean, if you take it from a baseball approach, the pitcher that, you know, hey, this kid throws 90 and it's all he's ever going to throw – I don't buy that. I mean, I look at it like it may be all he ever throws, but it's not from a genetic standpoint. You know, or this kid's only throwing 82. There's no way he's ever going to get up to 87 or 88. I don't buy that. I think that, you know, the limit is sometimes limitless compared to what our mind will tell it will or will not do. So, you know, your mind is your best friend or your worst enemy when it comes to genetic potential of what you can be or what you can't.
I spend a lot of time talking with coaches and athletes about will. And I have a saying that goes out that says, will beats skill every single time.
Right.
You know, at some point, and for some guys, you know, you got a guy, David Price, who's got a chance to be the first pick in the draft, great pitcher at Vanderbilt. You know, I don't know David, so I can't speak to his work ethic, but I know that just his ability, you know, the fact that he throws 98 miles an hour, is he is going to be able to take that a long way. But when he gets to a point, and for some guys it's a little league, for some guys it's high school, some guys it's college, minor leagues, wherever, there comes a point for every athlete that they meet their match physically. And what's going to keep them there is, like you're talking about, with that will and that work ethic and doing what they know. Because if you know what to do, and you don't do what you know,
right,
you're no better off than the person who doesn't know what to do.
Right.
So do you see a lot of guys fall short of that or don't understand that concept that they're really not giving themselves the best chance for success?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think if you look at pro ball in general, you know, and I'm not saying that every guy down the pike from a pitching standpoint is a 92 to 95 guy, but you know, the better share of every prospect in your organization is going to be upper 80s to mid-90s. Well, what separates that guy, you know, from the guy who makes it to the big leagues to the guy that doesn't? I mean, yeah, there are variables. Yes, there's, you know, his pitch ability, his stuff, his command. There's all of those. But, I mean, you know, all of that stuff can be worked on. All of that stuff can be bettered. And I think if you just look at pro ball as an example, there's 80 guys in a minor league organization that should make it to the big leagues based on stuff. But, you know, out of those 80, two or three, or, you know, only two or three make it.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I think you see examples of that in baseball every single day. And there are guys on your team who you look at and you say, he doesn't quite get it yet. Maybe he will, and it's my job to help him. But ultimately, that responsibility is up to you. I mean, it's got to come from within you to make it happen, to make it truly happen. And that's where guys sometimes fall short.
You take a guy like David Eckstein, who is a classic example of a guy who's maximized
his
ability. I mean, if that guy walks into most high schools, even here in Pennsylvania, hey man, we got a 6'2 shortstop. Sorry, you're gonna have to play somewhere else.
Right.
You know, and here's a guy who's a Major League Baseball All-Star and one of my favorite players ever.
Right.
Now let me ask you this question, which I get a lot, and it's kind of a philosophical question: is can you teach work ethic? Can you teach a kid to have a work ethic?
Well, I think if you look at the armed forces, they would say that you can, and I think that's the best example. The best example that I can give to you of that is that you can teach work ethic. If it's expected in your, if it's expected into your program, if you create sort of a cult in your program or a niche of your program that hard work is expected, then the kid who comes in and is an average worker becomes an above average worker.
Yeah.
And you don't really have to say a thing to him.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, from the armed forces standpoint, if you go into the Marine Corps, you know, you either have to be the way they want you to be or, you know, your life is going to be absolutely miserable. And at some point, you know, you kind of face a crossroads. It's one way or the other. And, you know, the people in the Marine Corps or the Army or whatever, you know, they face that crossroads and there's only one way for them to go. Well, you know, they choose the right path and their work ethic becomes better and all of a sudden they're a soldier. Mm-hmm. I think you can do the same thing with a baseball team. I think you can do the same thing with really any kind of team sport environment. It's creating the atmosphere first. It's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to be, hey, I'm a great worker as a coach. I have a great work ethic and so should you. It's part of it. But it goes way, way past that. It's what you do every day. It's what your expectations are of the team, and it's you demanding those expectations day in and day out to create the atmosphere that you want. It's why Coach Corbin is a neat person to coach for and play for. His expectations are off the chart. But his expectations of himself are off the chart, too. And, you know, so everything that he does creates an atmosphere for our players and for our coaches.
And for the coaches listening to this, I think the point to take away there is your players, I think, will tend to try to meet your standard of excellence. And if you hold yourself short of that standard of excellence, I mean, they're basically, if you want to see how your team is, if you want to see your team's work ethic, you want to see your work ethic, I mean, look at the team, because right. The team, I think, at any level, adopts the work ethic, adopts that philosophy, adopts a lot of the mannerisms and language of the coaching staff, and especially the head
absolutely.
Coach.
Absolutely. No question. We see it over and over in the teams that we play, and there are certainly different styles, and there are styles that work different and just as good as the other. But, you know, we decided a long time ago that we were going to be an up-tempo team. It was come-down-your-throat type of team, and that's the way we are. I mean, it's the way every kid on our team is, and I can promise you that they're not that way when they first walk in the door. Mm. We got kids who a lot of kids that we have are privileged, meaning, you know, they haven't had to work for a lot. They're not necessarily wrong side of the track kids, and you know, they're kids who've had a little bit in life, but. You know, you take mom and dad away from the equation and you get them an environment where you can kind of shape the way they're going to be every day. And it's a lot of fun to see them, you know, it's a lot of fun to see them take a different road.
Awesome. Trying to wrap up here, DJ. We're at about 27 minutes. Appreciate your time here. Last question for you, and I ask this of all the people that interview.
Okay.
If you could remove the skull cap of all the coaches listening to this interview and plant one thought or one idea in their head that's going to help them to be more successful, what would it be?
I don't think you can ever look at a kid, and I mean, this is kind of a personal thing for me, but I don't ever want to look at a kid and think that I sold him short. I mean, he may not believe in everything that I've told him, and he may not have done everything that I asked him to do. But at the end of the day, as a coach, I can look myself in the mirror and feel good about saying, you know what, I gave that kid everything that I had. And, you know, I know that that's cliche a little bit. But at the same time, I mean, I think as coaches, you have a tendency to give up on a kid when he doesn't do it exactly the way you think he should do it. Or you give up on a kid who challenges you. And I think that's a good thing for you as a coach. And obviously it's a way for that kid to grow. And so, you know, challenging me is a good thing. I want that. I want those kids to go out and think for themselves. I mean, after all, the things that I'm telling them, I think that it's going to help them, but ultimately they have to process it and use it in their own way. So for me, it's about giving the kid, each kid that I work with, the best opportunity to be as good as he possibly can. And I've got to challenge myself to be able to do that in a lot of different situations. I got some kids it's easy. I got other kids it's not easy at all.
Right. But that, I think that mindset and that approach that you're taking, what it does is when your career is over, however many years it is, you'll be able to look at the man in the mirror and have no regrets that you did everything you could have possibly done for every one of your kids.
Right.
And if you can get a pitching staff of a group of guys that they can look in the mirror at the end of the day or the end of their career and say, you know what, there's no stone I left unturned. I got after it in the weight room. I did the mental training. I did everything that coach asked me to do. and it just didn't work out for me because it wasn't in the cards. There's a life of no regrets versus the guy who sells himself short, and every time he goes to a baseball game, he's bitter because he feels like he could have done something to be out there.
Sweating the details, man. I mean, if I sweat the details and you sweat the details, we're going to be pretty good.
Yeah. Awesome. DJ, thanks for your time, man. Really appreciate it. Pleasure.
Thank you.
We'll see you soon.
Yeah, appreciate it, man.
Thanks for listening to the Brian Kane Peak Performance Podcast. Please make sure that you visit briankane.com. That's briankain.com. And sign up for my Monday message, where every Monday I deliver straight to your inbox videos, interviews, articles, tips, techniques, and strategies that you can use to master the mental game. You can also contact me through my website on our Contact Us page and see my calendar of where I'm going to be in the country and when I'm coming to your area so that we can get together and that we can continue to go out there and dominate the day.
The Brian Kane Peak Performance Podcast is part of the Top Coach Network. This is a production of Corn Belt Sports.